The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show. Came in a little hot there. Your Money with David Hayes. Going to have a good one today. Tom Bunger is our guest, a local estate planning attorney, frequent guest of the show. He'll be joining us here in just a few minutes. Let's go do a little news of the week brought to you by Class 101. Go join Class 101 at their new location this coming Wednesday, September 21st, for the ribbon cutting and open house from 5 to 7 p.m. Class 101 is over in Winslow Plaza. It's a terrific new spot. My son's been going there on Sunday afternoons for SAT prepping, and you know that's exactly the way a 15-year-old boy wants to spend his Sunday afternoons. All right, let's do a little news of the week. Out of business from J.P. Morgan. It's been 8 years since Lehman Brothers, the 158-year-old company, was forced for bankruptcy into bankruptcy protection. Happened on September 15th of 2008. There was no white horse that or white knight that emerged to rescue the company from its substantial investment in subprime mortgages. It was the largest U.S. bankruptcy ever and still is. And since Lehman Brothers' 2008 filing, the central banks, of course, around the world have been keeping interest rates really, really low. In fact, they've cut them 670 times, to be exact. Aging population, you know, we talk a lot about demographics here on the show. Predictable spending patterns going to where the puck's going, not where it is. 9 of the 12 fastest growing occupations expected in the upcoming decade are in the healthcare industry, including things like occupational therapists, physical therapist, home health aides, audiologists, which I could probably use when my hearing is kind of so-so, and nurse practitioners. That all comes from the Labor Department. Here's something that I found not interesting because it's kind of a sad thing, but there's 5.871 million job openings nationwide as of the end of July, the largest ever reported by the government from a statistical standpoint. Just 3 years ago, we were at 3.6 million. Here's the problem. We don't have any skilled labor. All of the vocations, the trades, no one's doing it. I had an opportunity to speak with Shelley Yoder this week, who is running for Congress, and we talked about, you know, the fact that people aren't getting trained in these trades. There's a real shortage of them. All my friends that have businesses that need these guys are struggling to find help. She brought up a really good point. You also have to have the desire. So we'll see, but that's a real problem. Social Security, small Social Security cost of living adjustment is likely for 2017. Don't get too excited about this. That would the average Social Security benefit will only go up by $2.70. I saw this, found it really interesting out of investment news. College savings plans. Indiana, as it ranked by the three-year performance of all of the plans in all 50 states, this is basically telling the tale of how good our plan is here in Indiana. We rank number 3 overall, just behind District of Columbia and Virginia. That's not too bad. And speaking of financial things as it relates to college, the free financial aid form, the FAFSA, now the open enrollment starts October 1st. So we're talking like in just a couple weeks. In fact, we're going to try to get Kim and Randy Stegmuller on the show pretty soon. They are, of course, the owners of Class 101 to talk a little bit about the whole college process, including filling out that FAFSA. And lastly, characteristics of the millionaire next door. This group called the Spectrum Group did some studies, and they said that the U.S. has 10.4 million households with assets over $1 million or greater. This does not include their home. 1.2 million of those households were worth between $5 and $25 million. Now, how did these people become rich? Did they come for money? In most cases, the answer was no. 77% of those surveyed reported growing up middle class or working class households. 52% said the bulk of their wealth came from earned income. Only 32% credited investing. It appeared most of these individuals benefited not from silver spoons in their mouth, but taking a particular outlook on life and following sound financial principles. When they were asked what those were, they said educational achievement, financial discipline, and the importance of just working. A couple other things. A lasting marriage may also help. Studies from Ohio State University, which I would take that with a grain of salt, says that married people on average have 77% more wealth than single people. Most of them got off to an early start. Most of them invested conventionally, not in these crazy ways that you hear, you know, about out there. Just very simple stuff. Many of them kept a close eye on taxes and risk. And then here's one of the most important things, of course, me being a financial advisor. According to the Spectrum Group, 78% of millionaires turn to financial professionals for help when managing their money. Let's take a break, folks. When we come back, Tom Bunger will be joining us live. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Appreciate you hanging out with us. We're going to have a good show today, a really good show. It always is one of the better shows when Tom Bunger, attorney, local attorney, estate planning attorney, comes on. He takes the opportunity to sit down with us and really explain some pretty complex topics in a very easy-to-understand way for the next hour or 40 minutes or so. We're going to be talking about proper estate planning, the objectives of estate planning, planning for incapacitation, taxes, wills, probate, gifting, proper titling of your accounts, and how to hold on to them as well. That's a lot, Tom.
That is a lot, David.
We only have 40 minutes. Tom, first of all, I want to congratulate you on a big milestone. I saw that last week. 30 years.
Oh, that's 40 now, David.
40 years.
Come on.
I was trying to give you a little credit for age. I was going to 40 years in your profession.
See I don't have any hair on top, you know?
Well, congratulations. What a milestone.
Thank you.
And only 30 more to go.
That's right.
When we talk about retirement in my field, your field, we don't really ever retire. We just kind of wilt away.
Some might say that. That's true.
I spoke to a person a couple weeks ago, who was from the East Coast. She was an elderly lady, and her investment person actually passed away. She was 94. Her investment advisor was 86.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, there we go. I talked to Doug Hughes earlier, and he said, well, that gives us some hope, Hayes, to continue on well into our 80s. But if you love what you do, why would you ever quit? That's my point.
I agree.
Tommy, when we talk about estate planning, you know, you've heard me talk about this a lot, that people spend more time statistically planning vacations, and I would even throw myself into that mix, probably even yourself.
I could be guilty of that.
Yeah, then they do worry about planning for their retirement, planning their estate. And I think when it just comes to estate planning, people just kind of step back and think, I don't want to do that. But let's talk about just what is estate planning, what's the objective of estate planning?
The idea is, nobody wants to talk about it because what are we talking about? We're talking about our death.
Right, being dead.
And that's not everyday fun.
It's more fun to talk about Disney World.
I would agree with you, but that's not what we're on here to talk about. That'd be another 40 minutes. The reality is we're all going to die. And the other reality is we're going to have something when we die, and it's going to end up someplace. And the whole idea of an estate plan first is identify what I've got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if nobody does anything else from the 40 minutes we share with them tonight, but goes home and makes a list, I mean, I know you collect that data when you meet with your clients, but a list of what their assets are, who their beneficiaries are, all the contact information. You've seen it. I've seen it. People who come in seeking help after they've lost a loved one, and you ask them, well, what's there? And they had this blank stare on their mm-hmm. face because somebody hasn't taken the time to create that personal list, identifying who you contact, letting them know who the beneficiaries are, letting them know what the accounts are. I mean, how thick is that book we get every summer that's in the paper of the unclaimed property?
Right.
Simply because people haven't bothered to write down and keep track of what they've got.
Just not paying attention. You know, proper estate planning kind of gives you control over important financial and personal decisions. It can help you and your family preserve the legacy that you'd like to have, accomplish goals even after you pass away. Tom, we've been toying with this idea, and actually not toying with it, we've done it, we've created that. We're not sure exactly when we're going to launch it, called the Family Estate Organizer, where, you know, for a few $100, we're going to sit down with people and, I mean, literally organize this thing where it can be a living, breathing organizer.
Everything, which it is. That's good.
Yeah, everything from all those documents you talked about,
right,
beneficiary forms to passwords to everything, so
yes,
that one person can walk up, pull that thing out, and know exactly where to start. And sometimes you just have to sit down and focus on this thing. I had to do a loan application. I finally got around to working on refinancing my mortgage. I've been telling people for, weeks on the show, hey, guys, rates are really low. And I'm like, I got to get this done. And finally I said, block myself out 2 hours, and I'm going to sit down and fill this thing out. And finally I got it done. And when I got it done, I got it to the bank today. I was so relieved. That's the sense that a lot of people have when they leave your office after finally accomplishing this.
Exactly. Exactly. No, just – it helps you to know that what's there.
We're going to take a break because we have a lot to talk about today. We're going to be talking about what things that you need to do when you're alive, what things then happen after your death. You heard me talk about it, the planning for incapacitation, taxes, wills, probate, gifting, how to title your accounts. I don't know if we'll get to all of this, but hopefully we'll get to most of this. So when we come back, we're going to be talking about planning for incapacitation. We'll talk a little bit about taxes. We'll be talking about gifting and hopefully a lot more with Tom Bunker. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Today is kind of the estate planning show. Tom Bunker, we wanted to get him in before football season really got cranking for Indiana because he actually has a job with the Indiana. It's an unpaid job, but it's a job.
It's a volunteer job. Yes, indeed.
But if you ever want to know who that guy is on the sideline that's working those phones and those cords, that's actually Tom Bunker. He does it for fun, does it because he loves the university and loves helping the team and the kids. So you got to be out there helping people, and you got to have fun doing it as well. So Tom's been on the show many, many times before, but we're going to be talking about, in this segment, planning for incapacitation. We'll hopefully get to taxes, gifting, and more. But Tom, whenever a person is thinking about, okay, what happens to me if I become incapacitated, can't make decisions on my own, I mean, it's really, really important they have certain documentation and choose the right people to serve in those roles.
Exactly, and the planning documents for that are a power of attorney. Today, when we talk power of attorney, we always use the word durable so that it's still effective when I become incapacitated. The other document with that is a healthcare representative. It's somebody to make healthcare decisions for you when you can't. Neither one of these are resigning and giving away my ability to act. They're, in essence, doing exactly what you're talking about, creating a support team, people to be able to step up and keep things going and moving.
Do you have to be incapacitated for these documents to spring into effect?
No. I am a believer. First of all, they're documents that when you give somebody the authority, they can steal as much as they can help. So you got to be very careful with to whom you give the power.
Mm-hmm.
But my belief is find people you trust, give them the ability to act. I don't like the springing power of attorney. You can draft it, says it becomes effective upon my incapacity. We defined it by doctors. But then I'm running around with a doctor's statement. Is it a current, an old one? And instead of being able to do what I need to do, I'm going back to the doctor's office to get more information.
Well, you know, I feel the same way. If you're going to give it, give it. Think about things in five-year increments, folks. If something would happen in the next 5 years, who would I want to give that power to?
Yes.
My personal story is that when my father-in-law has dementia, we have 24-hour care for him.
Mm-hmm.
When we had that come to Jesus day, which everyone who deals with this knows what I'm talking about, the last thing I wanted to do, last thing my wife or my brother-in-law wanted to do, was try to get a doctor's statement deeming him incapacitated. So fortunately, with Tom's advice and guidance, we had a power of attorney that did not require that. Worst case scenario is if it would have been in there, we couldn't have gotten to the doctor to save our life.
He was like
a cat going to the vet. He was not going to go, period, end of the story. So we have the durable power of attorney helps you make financial decisions, the healthcare power or healthcare proxy for healthcare decisions. I mean, those are really, really important. And Tom, I mean, as we talk about now kind of moving forward because we have so much to talk about, the other document that you put in place is a living will.
A living will, which is a condition-specific document. My death is imminent. The physician puts that in writing, says that the use of life-prolonging procedures is only artificially prolonging the dying process. Then Indiana gives you three choices. Yes, I want an IV and a feeding tube, even if the effort to sustain life is futile. Or no, I don't want it because the effort to sustain life is futile. And the third question is, I'm not going to decide that. I'm going to let my healthcare representative make that call.
I see a lot of older people picking the they do not want artificial nutrition and hydration. But
yes.
I see younger people a lot of times pick the, hey, I'd rather have the power of the healthcare proxy person that's in charge of that sort of decide. Let's switch gears just a little bit and talk about taxes. I mean, you talked about there's a one-in-one chance we're going to die. There's also a one-in-one chance we're all going to pay taxes. In fact, today was the corporate deadline for filing taxes on extension. So my CPA and I had a nice conversation. I'm like, just deduct it. So fortunately, I browbeat him enough to make those deductions come true. And then the final extension for individuals is October 15th. So we're actually, you know, kind of taxes are on my mind.
Well, but for those of us who are self-employed, everybody out there, remember, your third deposit was due today.
Oh, my gosh. And when you're self-employed, you pay both sides of the
you
FICA
got it.
Bill. So it's
That's
15
right.
points. It's a lot. Whatever it is, it's a lot. hopefully the roads are nice.
But what I assume you're trying to get to are the death taxes.
Well, I'm trying to get to there's taxes that you kind of can build up whenever you're alive that you haven't even paid yet. And then when you die, that's when the piper has to get paid.
Sure. But we need to know Indiana has now repealed the Indiana inheritance tax. It's gone. I don't care what the situation is or circumstance. When I started doing this 40 years ago, you lost a spouse, you had a $15,000 exemption, and you paid tax to the state of Indiana on your joint accounts. That's gone.
That's crazy.
I would agree with you. But the Indiana inheritance tax is gone. The federal estate exemption is now $5.4 million and a little bit of change. And that number is actually indexed to go up.
And that, let's quickly talk about that. So the federal estate tax, 5.4 indexing. What gets included in a taxable estate?
Anything I own or control. It may be a million-dollar term policy with zero cash value. But if I'm paying that premium and I own that policy and I own and I'm designating who the beneficiary is, that's $1 million for taxes in my estate. The value of real estate, the value of any asset I hold, goes on to that ledger sheet to see where you stand in relationship to that $5.4 million. Retirement accounts go in there.
When you talk about capital gains taxes, you know, while we're alive, you know, you sell something after you've held it and you pay capital gains taxes. But a lot of people will hold something, it will have a lot of built-up gain, and then pass away with that. So I had a conversation with someone the other day who was selling a piece of property to one of the local developers to put in more student housing, of course. And he said, man, I'm going to have to pay, you know, like $200,000 of taxes. I said, have you heard of a 1031 exchange? He said, yeah, I have, but I didn't really know what it's about. So we talked about it, and then I brought up this idea of swapping until you're dropping.
Right.
Explain, Tom, the process of a stepped-up cost basis upon your death, because most people don't know this.
Yeah, the one way around the basis and the capital gain is if I hold an asset until I die, because there's a death tax assessed, there's a new value put on the property for death tax purposes. That becomes, if it passes on to your heirs, that becomes the beneficiary's new basis. So that $200,000 capital gain, if I hold it till I die, it's subject to the death tax in my estate. If my total estate's under $5.4 million, I don't pay any federal estate tax. I have no Indiana inheritance tax. That $200,000 capital gain, because if I'd sold it while I was alive, I had the lower basis, is gone. Now, we got to keep track of that because this is a loss source of revenue, and there certainly are bills that have been introduced in Congress over the past couple of years in some way or another to try and modify that stepped-up basis rule.
I have a real story that I tell when I teach classes. I have one coming up at the Lifelong Learning Center over at Ivy Tech called Rejuvenate Your Retirement. I tell the story when it relates to stepped-up basis and gifting. And I talked about my grandmother having a home over in Highland Village and paying just, you know, a few thousand dollars for it. And later in her life, she decided to gift it to the girls, my mom and her three sisters. Well, when she did that, what no one really understood is she also gifted her cost basis.
That's right.
Well, then my aunt decided she'd like to buy the house, still is in it today, so she buys it from the other three sisters. Well, guess what? The three sisters had to pay taxes on that. But had grandma just, you know, gave that house to Nina, my aunt, and then Nina got a mortgage and paid off, you know, and then turned around and gave money to the other girls, no taxes would have been paid at all. But where people get tripped up is, well, how can I gift that something worth $100,000, Tom? Because I heard the limit was only $14,000, and I'm going to owe taxes, or they're going to owe taxes. Someone's going to owe some taxes.
That's right. But that's because that $14,000 is an annual exclusion amount. But that amount's all, that is for the annually. But if I go over that $14 million, then I'm using up part of my $5.4 million.
Yeah, so average people, who really care? I mean, you give it away. Now, you're supposed to file a gift tax return, which is for informational purposes only. No one's going to pay tax. So let's go through this real quickly. I give $114,000 to Jim, our producer.
Jim's smiling right now.
I think
he likes that idea.
Jim's back there hanging out. He's kind of trying to train a new person today. So I give $114,000. The first $14,000, quote, is free. I'm not going to have to go against my $5.4 million.
But exactly.
But my another 100 goes against my 5.4, so now I only have 5.3 left to give away in my lifetime. For most people, folks, that is not that
but
big
if
of
I've
a
got,
deal.
Well, let's say I'm somebody that's got $2 million. If I do that, I've still got $1,900,000 left, and I've got left the pass,
right.
But I've got 5.3 to take off against it. So you're right. There's no tax.
And let's don't forget, if you're married, you both have that $5.4 million.
That's exactly right, and you can share on that $14,000. You're exactly right.
Now, a lot of people, since you know the mid-'80s, have had their own retirement accounts. The age of the pension has fallen out. You know, they're living off of their own savings now. Retirement accounts, Tom, usually have been tax-deferred. So when you die with a retirement account, the income taxes on that, we call income with respect to a decedent,
right.
That has to be paid.
You are correct. Well, I'm speaking, there's no death tax, but we haven't figured out a way in the normal retirement account to do with that. Obviously, that's the beauty of the Roth. The Roth
right.
doesn't have the character or the taxable income in that retirement account follows it out to the beneficiaries. So if it's not a Roth, the income tax liability follows that dollars. It follows those dollars when it comes out of the.
And of course, the way the law reads currently, and this is subject to change, and I think it probably will change, that if you have properly titled beneficiaries, now we're going to talk about this when we come back in more detail, and you pass away, each one of those beneficiaries can take their share, put it in a properly titled inherited IRA,
yes.
not pay the taxes immediately, but
right.
start a minimum distribution based on their own life expectancy
right.
over what would be considered most of their life, and we call that the stretch IRA. Now, there's been legislation introduced the last couple of years to get rid of that and go back to the old five-year rule that, you know, means that you have to pay, get it out and pay the taxes. I mean, with trillions of dollars in retirement accounts and trillions
of
dollars in debt, I mean, if you just simply do the math, this is why for years, Tom, I've been saying the government does not have to raise taxes to raise revenue. And in my talks with Congressman Young over the years, where he served on the Ways and Means Committee, I'd ask him, you know, are they talking about this stretch IRA thing? Are they talking about changing the table for how you will have to take minimum distributions? Because right now, if you have a retirement account and you turn 70 and a half and you start taking minimum distributions, that's based on what they call the unified table. It assumes you have a spouse 10 years younger. Well, if they go to the single life table, that will increase the minimum distributions by like 30%. Well, that's more money out, more tax revenue in. And no one was talking about this. I brought it up, and I think that that will happen someday.
Sure.
Because most people, they get to minimum distribution age, they say, now, do I have to take money out this year? Yeah, you have to. How much? And I don't care if I tell them it's $3,000 or $30,000. They always say, oh, that stinks. So
yeah.
So it doesn't really matter. All right, when we come back, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to continue with our friend Tom Bunger. We're going to get into wills, trust, proper titling of accounts, and we're going to talk about that old nasty word, probate. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. If you missed any part of the show, you can always catch it all on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. here on the station. You can go to WGCLradio.com. We are now on iTunes. You can go to Google Play Music. There's really no excuse not to be able to listen to the entire show. And then as you're listening to the show and you're thinking, wow, there's a lot here. There is a lot here. It's kind of like taking a drink from a fire hydrant at times. And I wanted to get through a lot, so that was a quick segment. But we are teaching this class, Rejuvenate Your Retirement. It's at the Center for Lifelong Learning. You can go to Ivy Tech's website to check it out. We have condensed the classes to one class, so we will go Thursday during the day, 1 p.m. on September 22nd. So that's next Thursday. Still time to sign up. So even if you go to the website at Ivy Tech and it says enrollment has closed, they still accept enrollments. They just do that to kind of get the numbers. And then we will have our second part of that class on the 29th. So sign up. I think it's $39 or $49, and we do a lot over that time period. We talk about, you know, planning for a good retirement income to preserve your lifestyle. We talk about strategies to increasing Social Security benefits, planning for health care, maximizing tax efficiency of withdrawals from mutual funds and IRAs, all kinds of stuff. Plus, number one thing, we always have fun. Because if you're not having fun, why do it, right?
Right.
Tom Bunger is our guest, and we're talking about estate planning today with Tom. And Tom, we talked about planning for incapacitation. We talked about taxes, gifting, all kinds of great things in the last segment. But, you know, as we mentioned this earlier, sometimes people just don't do anything at all when it comes to their estate planning. And if they do nothing at all and they say, you know what, I'm not going to do anything. I don't want to talk about it. I'm not going to do anything. What happens when someone passes away?
Well, first of all, they don't think they've done anything, but many times they've done something just by the manner in which they've titled assets. When we die with two types of property. Property that's got direction, says where it's to go when I die. Life insurance policy, you think about that. Retirement account, I name a beneficiary. But if I've got an asset that is in two names, joint tenant with rights to survivorship, I've given direction on where it goes. But if I die with an asset in my name alone, if I don't make a will, it's gonna be dispersed in accordance with the laws of the state of Indiana. And if I'm married, it says a portion has to go to my spouse. I don't care if it's your first spouse or your fifth spouse. If you don't have a prenuptial agreement and you're married, that individual is entitled to a portion of that property that's just in your name.
What about the other portion?
The other portion's probably, if you got kids, it's a second marriage situation. And you die and you've got property just in your name. And that property is, first of all, the surviving spouse has the right to the first $25,000 of property in that estate. Then they're entitled to 50% of the value of all bank accounts, investment accounts that are in my name. And they're entitled to 25% of the value of the real estate that's in my name.
Complicated. Just do something, folks. Don't not do anything. Let's talk about these direct transfer of accounts, because you mentioned beneficiary designations that will get money to someone. The other ways you mentioned joint tenants with rights to survivorship, but also in Indiana and really, I guess, around the country, you can put other designations on other accounts like transfer on death or pay on death. Talk about that.
And again, over the years that I've practiced, more and more assets have been added to the category of the ability to give, transfer on death, pay on death, whatever term you want to use. Indiana now allows it on real estate, anything that can be licensed and title issued in the Bureau of Motor Vehicles can be transfer on death. You've got investment accounts that can be transfer on death. It gives you the ability to say, if everything happens the way I want it to happen and this person survives, here it goes. That's the problem with a transfer on death card. Unlike a will that can say, when I die, if X survives, I want it to go here. In the will, you can say, but if X doesn't survive, I want it to go over there. But on a survivorship account or pay-on-death account, if that person doesn't survive, that designation fails, and it ends up back in your estate as a probate asset.
And then when you talk about beneficiaries, a lot of times, most of the time, you should always have the option to put a checkbox called per stirpes or per issue.
Right.
Talk about that.
Well, what that's saying is, if I name my single individual, I've lost my spouse, I want everything to go to my kids. So the beneficiary is my three children, and they give you the option to check per stirpes. What that means is it'll be divided three ways, and if one of the kids predeceases you, that one-third will go to that deceased child's children. So it'll still be thirds. The two kids surviving will each get a third. The other one-third, by per stirpes, the little bit of Latin that's still around there, will be divided between however many children that one predeceased child has.
It's the only Latin I know, Tom.
It's about the only Latin I know, too.
And, folks, if you don't have the per stirpes designation, then what happens if one of your beneficiaries predeceased, the money goes to the other remaining beneficiaries, and you could have just disinherited your grandchildren without even knowing it. Tom, let's talk about the will real quick. Will's just an instruction manual to the courts to say, hey, here's what I want done if something happens, stuff that's in my name individually. But let's talk about trust briefly, what a trust is, because that's in a form of direct transfer as well.
Again, a trust involves three parties. Somebody creates it. Somebody operates it. That's the trustee. Somebody benefits from it. A trust is another way of leaving property to somebody when I pass and having somebody hold it for their benefit, and then they disperse income from it or the principal from it based upon the terms and conditions that I write in the trust. So somebody creates it, the trustee runs it, somebody benefits from it. Then, like a will, it can say, but if that beneficiary I've named predeceases, then here's where I want it to go. But that property can be held in trust for that beneficiary for until they attain a certain age. It can be held in trust for them for their lifetime.
And people that are good candidates for trust would be those people that would want to dictate some distributions down the road. Maybe they have a spendthrift child. They have assets that can't transfer directly through a beneficiary designation. I mean, that's the kind of folks you see that are the biggest candidates for trust.
Right. And the other thing is, we aren't all blessed with the opportunity to have assets and learn the value of having assets. And sometimes establishing that trust for a time period after the person passes gets them used to getting an interest check, a dividend check, and finding out that, well, you know, having that money over there is good. And so they don't get immediate ownership of that money, but they learn the benefit of holding on to the money. So they learn to be a saver. They learn the value of having things like that. So you kind of educate them or introduce them into the opportunity of holding on to some assets.
And when we talk about avoiding the probate process, if something transfers directly to someone, that avoids the probate process. So beneficiary designations, the joint accounts, the PODs, TODs, that all avoids probate.
Right.
And Tom, a lot of people are really afraid of this probate process. I don't know if they've been scared about it or gone to some seminar and been scared about it, but you know, they will say things like, this is a dirty little advertisement
right.
to the world that says, hey, I died, do you someone want some of my money, because of these public notices that run through the newspaper.
Right.
It's not that scary of a process. In fact, it's a very good process in many
it
ways.
Is, and I would suggest to you that it's a process that has been sped up considerably as a result of the revocation of the Indiana inheritance tax, because that knocked a 100-day window out of the process, because you'd file an inheritance tax return. The state of Indiana Department of Revenue had 100 days to review it if you had issues with that. So that's three months. I'm telling you, Dave, we're getting estates administered now within 7 to 8 months, which
out
typically
the door?
Out the door,
wow.
done.
That's great, because when it comes out of the probate process, it's a clean, clean, clean transfer. Tom, we're going to take a break. When we come back, my favorite segment is always questions of the week. These are real questions for real people. We'll come back. We have a question about a power of attorney. This came from one of my clients whose brother is a power of attorney for an elderly father. He's pretty much doing anything he wants to do, and she wanted to know if there's anything she can do about it. Family disputes are not ever fun, but we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about transferring homes into trust, all kinds of great questions. When we come back for Tom Bunger, this is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. If you could only hear the discussions off air.
It would be scary.
It was good stuff. Happy wife, happy life. They said, did you really say that? Well, I'm just saying. Yes, that is an absolute true statement. Happy wife, happy life. All right, Tom Bunger is our guest, local real estate and estate planning attorney. Been doing this for 40 years, folks, so he knows what in the heck he's talking about. I had a lot of questions come in. And the first one, Tom, was had a brother is the power of attorney for my elderly father. He's having my dad sign things, not really even using his POA, but then my father doesn't remember that he signed anything. For example, he was living with me. We had investment accounts, statements sent to my house. He moved out to assisted living. His brother had him sign papers to transfer the accounts to another investment firm. I'm at the end of my rope. Communication is broken down. To be honest, I want to make sure dad has what he needs, but also my father always wanted to make sure he left an inheritance. My brother is basically using what was dedicated to my family to pay all of his expenses and not touching the account, which was designated to his. And all she said was, I need some help. Any suggestions, Tom?
Well, yeah. First of all, it's in who you pick to be the power of attorney. My experience has been more times than not, I have found the person holding the power of attorney to try and go overboard to be fair to all concerned. I mean, I would argue in this situation, they're taking advantage of the situation.
Anything that the daughter can do to try and intervene?
It's
tough.
It's really a tough situation. Now, dad doesn't know what dad's doing. You could argue that we need a guardian because we're not appropriately allocating what's there, but it'd be a really tough, I would suggest, a really tough situation to resolve, to change, because they've got the authority. It's dad's money.
Maybe request a little mediator, someone, a family, someone to kind of get involved,
maybe say,
help mediator.
Let's have a conversation about this. But again, my experience is more times than not, families are fair with each other. It doesn't make good TV. It doesn't make good movies. It doesn't read well in a book. But my experience is more times than not, that's the way people treat each other.
All right, Tom, here's another question. Transferred my home into a trust a few years ago so that the nursing home can't take it. I always like that one.
Oh, yeah.
It was, yeah, they were in a class that we taught at Ivy Tech a few years ago. I don't know when it said. But anyway, last fall. And I talked about how it would not be protected because they are still in control of their own trust, not someone else. They say they really appreciate the information, went back to another lawyer, had it clarified, ultimately, got it changed over. They ended up not changing things at all. But, Tom, a lot of people think that they put things into a trust. I'm not going to – it's a long question. They put things in a trust to protect it from the nursing homes. That's pretty common. And a lot of times they've done something that really didn't help them at all.
No, I think what everybody has the idea that if I put it into a trust, it's not a countable asset. When I apply for Medicaid, The bottom line is, unless I give up complete ownership and control of that asset, it's going to be pulled back in. You know, back in the day, we could actually transfer property out, put it into a family trust that would exempt the property and pull it out. But even when we did that, that was giving it to the kids, and mom or dad had no control over it. That's why in this situation, as you read through the rest of the question, when the people had it presented, which meant I have to give up all control, I have no say over what happens, they elected to not make the transfer to the trust because it's basically an all or nothing situation. And again, as I sit in the chair as the person who just went on Social Security and a part of that baby boomer generation, there's being more and more of them, the reality is you young folks that are out there working, the system as it's set up cannot continue, in my mind, to function if we are enabling people of means to transfer their assets and expecting you to pay into the system to pay for me to go in the nursing home because I have self-qualified myself.
To be broke.
To be broke.
And didn't a few years ago they tried to pass legislation to throw people in jail that
They ran into a little First Amendment clause. They called it the grandma goes to jail statute, and what they literally said was it was against the law to have a planning session to talk about how are we going to qualify ourselves for Medicaid. You're exactly right.
So, Tom, you're on Social Security now?
I am.
I knew that, of course, and you did the file and restrict to spousal benefits only?
That's the plan.
And then to switch, you're over 70. Man, I love it when a plan comes together. Tom Bunker is our guest. 40 years in the business, man. That's pretty amazing, but you're still a young guy.
That's right.
And when you think about 40 years, has it gone extremely fast?
It has.
Gosh. You know, I think about me being in my business now 23 years, and it's just amazing how fast things have gone. All right, here's another question, Tom. It comes from a listener that named their trust as a beneficiary. You know, Tom, if I would actually read these before we started the show, that would go a lot smoother. That last question was so long, it lost my attention, so I'm glad you read it. But they left money, they left their IRA to a trust. Okay, is it okay to name my trust as a beneficiary to my IRA?
The answer is yes, but you have to make sure you've got the right terms and conditions in that trust. In essence, we would draft a specific trust that's in a position to inherit a retirement account and deal with that retirement account because you've got, as you alluded to earlier, about the ages mm-hmm. with the beneficiary and how we determine what the minimum distribution is and all of that. So the terms of the trust, we don't want just a general trust out there where it goes in. Then we've got problems.
You have to be able to identify the people.
Exactly.
And if you can do that, and there's not a lot of other gobbledygook in there, it's pretty easy to split those out. Everyone can stretch on their own. But sometimes you can't. Sometimes you have to default to the oldest beneficiary in that group to stretch. So if you want to leave your IRA to a trust, get with someone just like Tom that can help you lay that thing out to make sure it qualifies. Because if it doesn't, folks, it's a bad, bad deal. If you leave $1 million to a trust that doesn't qualify, and I always talk about, you know, people in retirement being debt-free, and we're so happy about that, and we strive for that. But folks, don't forget, there's always a debt against that retirement account.
That's
it's called
right.
taxes. And if you don't do this right, and I'm sitting here paying, you know, 39% federal, 4.5%. I mean, we're talking 44% of my IRA.
It's gone.
All right, Tom, let's see here. Oh, I wanted to bring up something that I saw a recent problem. Locally at the university, you know, you got a couple choices with your retirement accounts over there, and I think both of them are great. But in one of the programs, there's different contract numbers. And I just ran across, it happened with a deceased client who thought that they had updated their beneficiary forms, but only updated it under one contract number. Well, the other three contract numbers they had within the retirement plan named no beneficiary at all. That's creating some issues.
And that comes back to the very first thing we talked about in the hour. It's a good way to bring us back to the beginning, which is creating that list. The planning tool that you're putting together for everybody is to recognize that accounts like that have multiple contracts. And the form may make reference to just one of those. So you want verification of who that mm-hmm. is, and you want a list where you know what it is so you know what's there. To me, that's a matter of dotting the I's and crossing the T's, but it is to recognize that when I've got that account with multiple contracts, I need to make sure that when I designate ask for the forms and do it, that I can check off and see that all those contracts are there. So it's paying attention to that, what you're doing, but more importantly, keeping track of it.
Yeah, go double check. And if you are a participant in the plan, you can log on and change that right online. So it's right. Pretty easy to do. Hey, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to ask Tom one last question when we come back. It's from many, many years back. For those of you that have been listening to the show for the last, you know, let's say 10 years at least, you might actually remember who this person is that's asking this question. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, join Class 101 at their new location this coming Wednesday, September 21st, for the ribbon cutting and open house from 5 to 7. Class 101 is over in Winslow Plaza. You can't miss the sign. They're doing a great job. There are a lot of people that really want their kids to get this kind of help, and our kid is one of them. All right, Tom, I won't be here next week, folks. I'm going to be out of town. So Wayne Thacker, Ryan Belcher, they're actually going to take the show next week. So Lord help you all. But I'll be back the next week. I promise you that. And I want you to know, this weekend we're going on our big Hayes Boy camp out that we do every spring and fall down to beautiful West Boggs Park in Ligoti, Indiana.
That'd be the Wild Woolly Hayes Boys.
The Wild and Woolly Hayes Boys. We always have a great time. Talk a lot about things that you don't get to talk about otherwise. But, Tom, years ago, when people that listened to the show it was a call-in show, and we would have a gentleman by the name of Raymond that would call in on occasion. Raymond was hillbilly at best. He had a wife named Imogene, his son is named Petey, and he would call in with all kinds of questions. And he always loved when you were on the show. Now, we had to ban Raymond from calling in, and then fortunately
why it's no longer a call-in
show.
Yeah,
we had to move to no call-ins. But Raymond called, and he said, Tom, you're one of my favorite people that ever come on the show, and Petey and I are going to head down to Lake Monroe to do some fishing. And they really wanted to know, you know, if they should be fishing with a Zoom lizard, a power bait, live bait. Should they be looking, you know, at fishing with jigs? And he said he knew that you'd know the answer because you are a pro bait specialist.
Oh, that's so kind of him. That's right. And I'm sure after my great advice, he didn't catch anything. But
well, he had a lot of adventures, if you remember.
I mean, he did.
Imogene tore her finger off in a dream catcher once.
He's a very troubled fellow.
There was a tornado, and they had he was in the trailer, if I remember right, in the garden tub with his weather radio on, while Imogene and Petey were outside winching the trailer down. I mean, we had so many good stories.
We did indeed.
And he wanted me to pass along to you with his question this week that he still loves listening to the show, and he still takes all of your advice when it comes to fishing and probates. All right, folks, we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Hope you enjoyed the show. Have a great weekend, everyone. Goodbye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.